and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, the Tampa Bay area has an incredible art scene from local painters to muralists to filmmakers, a growing theater and museum scene. We're going to talk with some local pottery makers in just a moment about a big event this weekend. And later, time is running out to sign up this year for the Affordable Care Act. Is the ACA dying? We'll hear some expert advice about signing up for Obamacare in just a moment. But first, one listener commented about yesterday's discussion about homelessness here in the Tampa Bay area. Here's what one listener had to say.
Hi, this is Becky in St. Pete. In regards to the show Thursday about homelessness, I think what homeless and low-income people need is money. It's about time we start a national conversation about a guaranteed annual income for everyone. You could talk about raising the minimum wage, but that doesn't help if there are no jobs. And low-income housing is even unaffordable if you have no money.
Well, that was a comment about yesterday's program that still no room at the Inn event is tonight at 6:30 in downtown St. Petersburg. What we were talking about yesterday. Well, this weekend, the annual Tour de Clay will take place in five cities locally: San Antonio, Lutz, Odessa, Palm Harbor, and St. Petersburg. It's a way to showcase some of the incredible pottery making that goes on here in the Tampa Bay area. And a full disclosure, WMNF, I think, is getting some of the benefits of this weekend's Tour de Clay. And with us right now are two local pottery makers, Kimberly Cummings and Matt Scheinman. And Kimberly and Mac, welcome to WMNF. Great to see you.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for coming by. Matt, let me ask you. There's a toggle switch right in front of you on that little box, and it's the on button, and I failed to turn that on. So how did you both get into pottery making?
Do you want to go first?
No, you go first.
Okay. I was kind of born into it. My father is a potter. He was my undergraduate professor growing up.
Where?
At Ashland University. So he had raised three children just off of making pots for a long time. By the time, I'm the youngest of three kids, so by the time I was six, he was able to land a university job. When I became 18 or 19, I went to college at the same place because I got free tuition there. Took a ceramics course, fell in love with it, ended up getting my master's degree, and then coming here to St. Petersburg for a residency, and we've ended up living here and setting up a studio and everything.
What attracts you the most to a pottery?
Well, when I was first starting it, I liked it because it seemed like an immediate thing. I started off in painting, and I didn't like that paintings took months to finish. And, you know, there's a tactile quality to ceramics. I was able to sit down, throw a piece, have it be somewhat finished right away. And, you know, as I learned later, it's actually a much slower process than what it feels like. But at first, it feels like it's an immediate thing. You can have a lump of clay in front of you and then immediately form something and make it.
Mm-hmm. Kimberly, how about you? How did you get your start in painting?
My head is nodding like a little doll in a car going, yes, I feel the same way. My story is very different than Matt's. I, at the age of three, decided that I wanted to be the next Shirley Temple. And then later Lucille Ball. So I was a trained actor. And from three until... I still do a little dabbling. Moved to Los Angeles and continued a life as an actress. I went through just a really tough time in my life about 21 years ago, 30 years ago, and decided that I needed something in my hands to heal me. And there was a sign at the clay factory on Southdale Mabry in Tampa that said, you know, you always wanted it. Call today. And I went, I have always wanted it. I think I'll call today. And Kim Kirchman was my first teacher. And I told her, she asked the five of us to go around the room to say, you know, why are we here? And I said, well, I'm having a rough time. And also, I just want to make a garden pot like the home, you know, store. I don't want to give a name. And then I'll quit. So that worked out. So I kind of felt like, Matt, once I wrapped my hands around that clay and just could see that, I'll do this for my husband, that I had control of that, it was a beautiful thing for me. And because my mother was a painter, I finally realized that I was not a good glazer at all of pots. Never could just glaze. It just always looked brown. And so I started hand painting. And then, I mean, that's it for me. Like, that's until I die, I know that's what I'm going to be doing to make me happy and to share for other people.
Is it a full-time thing for you now?
It's a full-time thing now. I used to be an esthetician for 29 years, and my back was killing me because I was doing both 7 days a week. And now I'm just doing the part that doesn't bring in as much money, but my back doesn't hurt quite as much. So, yeah, it's full time.
Tell us about Tour de Clay. It's a showcase of the work of local pottery makers in five cities. Tell us a little bit more about the history and you know, when and where.
About 11 and a half years ago, Peter Streit, for me personally, came to me. I was working at the City of Tampa, Hyde Park Arts Center, and he came in. He goes, I want to talk to you about forming this tour of, you know, the best potters. And I said, God, Peter, you know, you're way bigger than me. You're doing all these shows. And he said, I really want you to be a part of it. And so it took about a year to get together. And at our first meeting, he had all the people, he hadn't told me who he'd spoken with. He had all the people together in one room at his studio in Tampa. And there was Kim Kirchman and Mark Fell. And I went, okay, I don't know how this just happened, but there's my first pottery teacher. So this is our 10th year doing the Tour de Clay, and it has grown. And we have 32 potters, and they aren't all from Tampa. So we have people that drive from across the country, and it is a phenomenal show. There's nothing, it's not like, not to be mean, but not like a little craft show. This is a highly professional showing of nationally recognized potters and clay teachers, professors that make a living both by selling their wares and by teaching clay students.
This isn't just about bowls and cups. It's a lot more complex, this kind of art.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be. Like we were saying earlier in the waiting room, there definitely are still bowls and cups, but it's been taken to a much higher craftsmanship level. This isn't an entry-level thing, so even while we still keep a lot of the objects as very recognizable things that people can buy and purchase, the level of craftsmanship is very, very high on a lot of these things. And it's also going to encompass a little more sculptural work as well as tableware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was looking at some of the artists who are going to show this weekend. Catherine Matheson is there's when you talk about sculpture, I mean,
her work.
Really incredible sculpture.
I'm a stalker of hers.
and then William Kidd, who I've seen some of the local art shows. Talk about William Kidd for a moment. He's one of the people showing in San Antonio.
You probably know him better than I do.
I collect his work. Yeah. I'm a stalker of his as well. first of all, he's a really nice guy, and he happens to be incredibly talented. Everybody sees something different when they look at his work. It's a bowl of fruit, or it's not, but it's happy art to me. It's colorful. Each piece is incredibly unique. And even though you can spot a William Kidd piece from across the room with 1,000 pots, he still continues to do new things. And he's a big addition to the Tour de Clay. And I will say in that breath that Matt Scheinman is our newest member and also our youngest member. And the day that we had him at our last meeting, or the night that we inducted him into the Tour de Clay, we realized that a lot of us are really old and that he had a brand new baby. His son is a few months old. And it was, we were all kind of stunned going, gosh, we're really old. Yeah, we need new blood to continue the tour. So we're happy that Matt has many, many years ahead of him.
Matt, how would you describe your art?
My stuff is all functional pottery. It's all atmospheric fired, which means that it's been put into a wood kiln or a soda kiln. So for the wood firing in particular, it's a long process. We're burning about 3 to 10 cords of wood, depending on which kiln's going into. We're getting to a high temperature that the wood ash is adhering to the pieces, and it's actually melting and turning into a glaze on its own. So we're melting wood and turning it into a glass, essentially, onto the pieces. So all the color that you're seeing on my pieces is coming from the wood that's locally sourced and used here.
Mm-hmm. And Kimberly, yours is you paint on your pottery, right?
I do. I am inspired by my garden and the beaches that I grew up on in Florida. And my mother was a fashion illustrator. And in the last couple of years, I've also added some of her illustrations from the 50s and 60s that I think are now current, kind of Mad Men-ish. But that's where my joy comes from. I wouldn't say that making the piece is my everything now. It's telling the story, and I don't exactly know when to stop sometimes. Yeah. is more.
We're talking with two of the local potters who are involved with the annual Tour de Clay, which takes place over the next 2 days on Saturday and Sunday. Five studios, 32 potters. Matt Scheinman is here, and also Kimberly Cummings. And let's name the studios where the Tour de Clay is going to take place. Kimberly, do you want to tell us where these studios are?
Sure. Each studio has a kiln opening, and Matt's studio in St. Pete, where I'll be with him, is the first kiln opening at about 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. tomorrow morning. And then we go to...
And where's Matt's studio, just so folks know?
4635 8th Avenue North in St. Petersburg.
Okay, all right.
And all the addresses are on the TampaTourDeClay.com, and Tour de Clay is D-E, Tour de Clay. And then we, once you come to our studio, you go to the Pottery Boys, Glenn and Keith, and that's 30 Bogey Lane in Palm Harbor, and they have 8 potters. Not to be missed. And then Hidden Lake Pottery is in Odessa, and that's Kim and Mark's beautiful studio and on a great piece of property, and they have 8 potters. and then Wellman and Welsh Pottery in Lutz, which is 5 minutes from Odessa. So, you know, just know that if you're getting tired, just scoot over 5 more minutes and you'll be at another great studio, and they have 5 potters. And then San Antonio Pottery is in is about 30 minutes away. That's Jack Boyle's studio, and he has 6 potters there.
So will there be refreshments and little bit of drinking going on folks
Matt,
who choose to?
Matt, what have you done to lure our people?
We built a wood-fired pizza oven in our place. We'll be doing wood-fired pizzas, and then Cycled Brewing, who's one of the local breweries in St. Petersburg, they've graciously donated beer, so we'll also have Cycled Brewing at our place as well.
Sounds great. So what are the times on Tour de Clay this weekend?
10 to 5 Saturday, 9 to 5, please, 9 to 5 tomorrow, and 10 to 4 on Sunday.
All right, and the address on the web is TampaTourDeClay.com.
It is.
Yeah. It seems really fantastic. Are there any other Tour de Clays in the Southeast?
Thank you for asking. Matt was brave enough to tackle getting us into the number one ceramics magazine, Ceramics Monthly, October-November issue, and it shows that we are the only tour in the entire Southeast. I'm talking like not in Louisiana or Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina.
Nothing in Miami or Fort Lauderdale or Palm Beach?
No.
That's quite a tribute to the local artists.
And we do have people that drive in from Atlanta and Miami, Orlando, obviously, to come every year. It's we have a lot of collectors that come each and every year, and we appreciate them so much. And we love also WMNF, and that's why most of the studios donate.
Wow, well, thank you for that. So the annual Tour de Clay is this weekend, this Saturday and Sunday. 5 studios in 5 different cities in St. Petersburg, Palm Harbor, Odessa, Lutz, and San Antonio. And 32 potters in all will be taking part in this year's annual Tour de Clay. Kimberly Cummings is here, and Matt Scheinman, thank you so much for coming by. Kimberly, if people want to see your work online, do you have a website?
It's Kimberly, K-I-M-B-E-R-L-I, pottery.net. My work is at Smith Gallery in Tampa and Florida Craft Art Gallery in St. Pete. And I appreciate this so much.
Thank you. And Matt Scheinman, how about you?
It's MatthewSchiemanPottery.com. So S-C-H-I-E-M-A-N-N is how you spell the last name.
Do you guys have a favorite movie about pottery?
It's not Ghost.
Okay, sorry about that. It's not Ghost? Well, what is it? What's your favorite movie about pottery?
I don't think I have.
There are
any pottery movies, yeah.
Maybe not we too many.
Ghost is pretty much the pottery.
Okay, well, then maybe I shouldn't play this song next.
Oh, no, I love the song.
All right, well, thanks a lot for coming by, Matt.
Thanks, Rob.
And Kimberly, thank you so much.
Thank
you. You're
listening
to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg. Bobby Hatfield, one of the Righteous Brothers, there doing his doing a version of Unchained Melody. We are listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. There's just a few days to enroll for the Affordable Care Act because the deadline is coming up on December 15th. And we're going to talk with Melanie Hall, who's Executive Director of the Family Healthcare Foundation locally, who's one of the experts. If you've ever had questions about signing up for the Affordable Care Act, Melanie can answer just about every question you have. I was reading some of the numbers, enrollment on the Obamacare Marketplace, healthcare.gov, hit 3.6 million
As the sign-up season that the federally run exchange entered into its final 2 weeks, officials said Wednesday. So these are a little bit older numbers, but 3.6 million people. I think that was as of last Saturday. Melanie, welcome to WMNF. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thanks for having me back.
Are people being scared away for signing up for the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare because of the threats in Congress to undo portions of it?
They're not being scared away. In fact, we have been busier than we've ever been before. So again, part of that is because of the condensed time frame. We only have 6 weeks for open enrollment this year. But part of it is that people are getting letters if they were enrolled before. They're getting letters talking about the increases in their premiums without an explanation that their tax credits go up proportionally. So they come in initially concerned that they're not going to be able to afford premiums.
They see the premiums going up and say, boy, I just can't afford that premium. But what they find out is that the tax credit is also going up?
Correct. And once we show them what they're now eligible for 2018, and that when they apply that increased tax credit to 2018 plans, the vast majority of people are doing better than they did last year, and they're leaving fairly happy with their choices. It may mean they drop down to a lower silver plan or even to a bronze plan, but for many people, that still works for them. For those people that have chronic conditions or really need a higher level of coverage, sometimes it does amount to them adjusting a little bit in terms of making sure that they have a plan that has that low deductible that's going to allow them access.
We often hear about people in Washington telling us that there's just a few plans available and that Obamacare, the ACA, is collapsing. Here in Florida, what's our status? How many plans are available for people who are signing up, listening here in the Tampa Bay area?
In the Tampa Bay area, we have 55 plans. And so we have three different carriers, Florida Blue, Molina, and Ambetter. And they each have several options, more than several options. And so for the most part, they're offering HMOs, they're offering EPOs, they're offering less expensive plans with higher deductibles, or they're offering, you know, higher and more expensive premiums, but with a much lower deductible and lower copays for those people that need immediate access.
When does the sign-up period end?
It ends next Friday, December 15th. You were correct about that.
Mm-hmm. People have a week.
They have a week. And so there are a couple of options for people. Certainly, they can go on healthcare.gov and fill out their application online. However, if they would like some local assistance, somebody to really help them, a local navigator, our phone number is 813-995-1066. We also have an enrollment event tomorrow, our last weekend event. Tomorrow at Al Lopez Park at the Hunt Recreation Center. We'll be there from 8:30 until noon, and people are more than welcome to stop by with questions or asking for assistance.
All right. Well, if you're anywhere in the Tampa Bay area and you want to sign up for the Affordable Care Act and you haven't done so, if you have questions about signing up for the Affordable Care Act, we have probably the premier expert on that topic with us right now. And she's very busy, but she's kindly invited volunteered her time to come in and answer your questions about the Affordable Care Act. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address, DJ. You can send your email to dj@wmnf.org. Does it help to have a navigator in signing up for Obamacare?
There are many people that can get on and do the application. I will say that the application is much better than it used to be. It's streamlined. It's fairly glitch-free. There are many people that can get on and that are comfortable filling out that application themselves. But there are also people that have, questions about what counts as income, or people who have immigration documentation that needs to be turned in. Things that they may need that extra assistance. Or if somebody is doing this in a language that is, not their original language, they certainly might need some extra help.
There's only a week to sign up for Obamacare, so if you've got a question, call us up, 813-239-9663. Patty Perkey and Frank Knox are our phone producers today. In the tax bill that's moving through Congress, I think it's the Senate bill that has the elimination of the mandate that people purchase health insurance. What effect do you think that's going to have on people in the country?
So one of the things that we have found interesting over this is now our fifth year doing this, is the first year we certainly heard grumblings from consumers that they felt frustrated that they were being forced to buy health insurance. We rarely hear that these days. And in fact, the vast majority of people that come to us and are looking for assistance seem incredibly grateful that they have an opportunity. And now that they understand that there is financial assistance available, 9 out of 10 Floridians get financial assistance to pay for the premiums. They do seem relieved and sort of grateful that they have the opportunity. However, going forward, if the individual mandate is repealed, then what that will mean is it will be a choice, obviously. And one of the reasons why it was put in place as mandatory in the first place is obviously the more people coming into emergency rooms, hospitals, doctor's offices that have support, financial support, and the ability to pay for those services, the less those costs get passed on to everyone else. So one of the things we may face again, which was what we saw before the Affordable Care Act, was that those costs don't get only passed on to people on the marketplace. They get passed on to everybody that has commercial insurance.
All right. So if you have an employer and your employer provides you health insurance, you're likely to see, because of the elimination of the mandate, an increase in your health insurance rates.
It is certainly possible. And that is what we saw before the Affordable Care Act. And one of the reasons why that mandate was put in place is if you create a wider risk pool, you keep those costs down for everybody that's involved with insurance.
Are people signing up here in Florida?
Very much so. So as of December 2nd, there were about 802,000 Floridians that have signed up here in Florida.
How does that compare to last year?
It's actually beyond what we had done at this point last year. Again, that we have to take that with a grain of salt because we have 6 weeks, a shortened period to sign people up. But also, these last 2 weeks is when you see the major jump in enrollments. As well as December 15th, or after like December 16th, is when all the auto re-enrollments happen.
What does that mean?
For anybody who's on the marketplace now, who doesn't actively go in and choose a new plan for next year, they will be automatically re-enrolled in the plan that they chose for this year. And they just continue making their payments and it moves forward as planned. So you get another large increase with that auto-enrollment population that will happen on the 16th.
Is it good to auto-enroll? I mean, let's say that you're happy with your plan. Should you just let it slide, or should you re-look at what's possible?
So that's a great question. And one of the things that we always encourage everyone to do is to go back in and actively shop. Because with those increased tax credits, there may be a plan out there that is just as good, that will cost you less money, that will have a lower deductible, will have some sort of other benefit for you. So it's always encouraged to go back in and actively shop and look at the plans that are offered each year.
You touched on this before, but do people ever come to you and say, Melanie, I can't afford to sign up for Obamacare, so I'm just going to pay the fine. I'm going to, just because I don't like any of the plans and there's really nothing in it for me. Do people say that to you, and then do you have a happy answer for them coming back?
Yes, they do say that. And depending on where they live, sometimes we have a happy answer for them. Sometimes they can't afford it because they fall in the Medicaid gap, because Florida did not expand Medicaid.
Medicaid gap is working poor people? Is that who's in there?
It is folks that are under 100% of the federal poverty level. The way the original program was designed is that everyone up to 100% would have been covered by Medicaid expansion. When the Supreme Court ruled that states could opt out of that, Florida was one of the states that did. It's been problematic for us, certainly, because there are times when we have to sit down with someone and say, you don't make enough to be able to get financial help for this program.
Wow. Even though they're very low income.
Correct. It's actually the saddest and hardest conversation for us as navigators to have. Again, if you live in Hillsborough County, there's a very robust county health care plan here. Polk County has a health plan. Pinellas has a version of a health plan. It's a little bit different because you have to work there a certain number of quarters to qualify.
All administered by the local county.
Correct. In Pasco, though, there is not a county health plan, and we also provide that assistance in Pasco. So that's a hard conversation to have there sometimes.
Do you help people hook up with the local county health plan, too? Can you send them in the right direction?
Absolutely. In fact, we assist, often with those applications or making sure that they get to the right spot to do those applications. Again, in a county like Pasco, what we would do in that scenario is to make sure that they get connected with the federally qualified health centers up in Pasco County so they have access.
Well, let's take some questions from our listeners. If you have questions about signing up for the Affordable Care Act, we have one of the most knowledgeable people around with us in the studio today. Melanie Hall is Executive Director of the Family Health Care Foundation, And she can help you find many of the answers to your questions about the Affordable Care Act. Let's go to Stephen in Sarasota. Hi, Steve. You're on WMNF. Do you have a question?
I'm here.
Hi, Steve. You're on. What's your question for Melanie?
I'm here, yep. My question is, I was wondering if she knew how the subsidies were determined. Is it all based on income? Because I rolled my plan right into next year. I had an Obamacare plan, rolled it right into next year, and like I said, I'm not complaining about what I got. My subsidy from last year was $569, and this year it's $850, and my monthly premium went up $20. So I was just wondering how they determine the subsidy and the increase in your insurance.
That is such a great question, and I can't explain that, actually. The subsidy is based on the second lowest silver plan. So they take the cost of that second lowest plan, they determine what percentage of someone's income, and again, that's based on family size and the amount of your family income, and they're able to determine how much tax credits you should get toward applying to plans. You can then take those tax credits and apply them to that lowest level silver, which would actually mean that you potentially pay less than you did the year before, or you can even look at bronze plans. We've had plenty of people this year that because of that increase in the tax credits have actually not had to pay a premium at all. They've chosen a bronze plan with zero premium. Granted, it meant that they accepted a larger deductible, but they felt that gave them a nice safety net. The reason we're seeing those big increases in silver plans and in the tax credits this year is because Florida insurers knew that, or at least anticipated, that this administration would cease those cost-sharing reduction payments. And so, for the most part, all of the increases for plans this year were loaded into that silver level. And as a result, we saw those big jumps, both in premiums, but also in tax credits. So you brought up a great point. People definitely need to go back in. They don't need to be scared off by the letter that says that their premium payment amount, you know, for that plan is going up from $500 to $800 without understanding that their tax credits are going up proportionally to help them pay for it.
Well, I think it's interesting because the deductible and max out of pocket that I have actually went down. Mm-hmm. From $2,000, which is max out of pocket, which is reasonable as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's not a $5,000 or $8,000 max out of pocket. And my premium went down to $1,850 instead of a $2,000 max out of pocket and deductible. So, I mean, I can't complain. You know, the $20 increase is $240 more a year, but my out of pocket went down $150. So, I mean, it's kind of give and take. But I didn't go back and look, you know, at a different plan. I mean, and the plan I think I have is very well, you know, is a good plan. So
I think if you're satisfied with your plan, it's affordable for you and it gives you access to the doctors and medications that you need. If it's working for your family's health needs, it sounds like that might still be a good plan for you to look at. But at the same time, if you want to go back and actively shop, you're certainly able to do that. And, you know, we encourage everyone to at least take a look around.
All right, Stephen, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
All right, we're talking about signing up for the Affordable Care Act. The deadline is next Friday. If you've got a question about signing up for the Affordable Care Act, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. And you can also send your email question to us at dj@wmnf.org. Stephen had a really good surplus there. I mean, the numbers were good for him. How common is that, though? Is that the exception, or do you think that a lot of people might find out that there's good news in the ACA this year?
I think for anyone that's between 100% of FPL, which is when subsidies start, up to about 250, even 300% of federal poverty level, which is really higher than you would think. For those folks, and I'll do an example, a family of four, anywhere from about $27,000 up to potentially about $75,000, they're going to get some tax subsidy, and it's going to be helpful for them. What is difficult is when we run into a scenario like we just talked about a few minutes ago where somebody's under that 100%, or for someone who is, you know, higher than they're going to get much subsidy or no subsidy at all, the plans do feel expensive. So we really deal with a wide variety. But Stephen's question, I think, is common. And it's a pretty typical scenario with people that we assist doing that one-on-one navigation.
All right, Stephen, thanks a lot for your call. Let's go to Jason, who's in Tampa. Hey, Jason, you're on with Melanie Hall. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a consumer, and I had a question about copays. I'm down between two plans, and I've contacted a lot of different people, and no one can seem to answer this question, so I'm hoping you can do that.
Okay.
For one of the plans, the copay for pharmacy would be, you know, $5. The other plan, which is same company, very similar coverage, would be you pay for a prescription until you hit your deductible, and then it's $5.
Correct.
So that seems pretty straightforward, but here's my question. In order to be an informed consumer, I'd like to see a list of how much these medications would cost. So I'm relatively healthy. I don't see the doctor a lot during a 12-month period. So my visits would be for things like sinus infection and things like that, antibiotics. But when I call pharmacies, when I call the actual insurance companies, they tell me that those price lists aren't available, and they range. Even the same medication will have a different price attached to it. So as a consumer, how do I choose between those two plans when I have no idea how much those medications are going to cost me?
It's a great question. So here's what I speak to consumers about all the time. And by the way, I really appreciate the fact that you're trying to be such a conformed consumer. But I do think it's important to look at the differences between those two plans. If you're offered a plan that allows you to buy generic drugs for $5, that is predictable. And most people prefer that ability to be predictable. And that's, by the way, before you're meeting whatever your deductible is. It's from what we call first dollar coverage. So from January 1st on through the year, if you are given a prescription, you're able to get that generic version for $5. The other plan is telling you that you have to meet that entire deductible and that those costs will be out of pocket. So your decision is whether or not you want to go with something that is predictable and begins right away, and if that is worth it to you based on the difference of the price of the two plans, the premium.
When I go with something that's predictable, it's going to cost me a lot more money.
Is it, if the difference is a lot more and you don't use many medications, you think that it's very sporadic, then you might end up being better off through the year by going with that plan that will cost less per month. However, you will have to pay out of pocket for your prescriptions. Just, you know, to consider, sometimes medical needs are unpredictable. And even though your past history is that you haven't needed much medication, you may need to think about how you're going to feel moving forward if you're going to have to meet that entire deductible before any of your pharmacy benefits kicked in. The last thing is, when you call your the company that you're considering,
yeah,
they should be able to offer you something called a formulary. And that formulary should be able to tell you how much tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 drugs cost. And you should be able to find out that, you know, any drugs that you might be had to take in the past. Again, if you're talking about sinus infection, et cetera, those tend to be like tier 1 drugs. But they should be able to provide you with a formulary that tells you what the costs are for each of those tiers.
So I talked to a pharmacist who suggested the same thing and called Blue for that answer. I talked to 3 different people, and they would not provide that information or couldn't provide that information.
That's disappointing.
So that was where my question came from, is how do you become an informed consumer when those companies won't release the information to you ahead of time?
I think it's a valid question, Jason, and I would encourage you to call back again. I really would. They should be able to provide you with a
call
formulary.
Call the Blue.
Correct.
Again.
Or, you know, any of the carriers that you're considering, they should be able to provide you with a formulary.
I appreciate your time.
All
sure.
Right. Jason, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jackie in Pasco County. Hi, Jackie. You're on with Melanie Hall. And what's your question about the Affordable Care Act?
Well, first of all, the pre the pre-existing,
yes, ma'am,
would never work if you don't have to have mandatory insurance, because then nobody would get insurance, wait till they get sick, and then they would have to be able to buy insurance. But what happened to me was, I live in Pasco County, and when I was 64, I didn't make the $1,000 a month that you have to make to get Obamacare.
Yes, ma'am.
And I couldn't afford to buy insurance. So I went to every agency, everybody I could. The only way I could go to anybody, get any kind of medical care, was to apply for Medicaid, get turned down, take my letter to Good Samaritan Hospital. I live in Lutz. I had to drive all the way to Newport Richey to go to Good Samaritan. You have to wait from, like, early in the morning. Like, people get there at 5-6 o'clock in the morning, and then you wait all day. And you're sitting there in this real crowded little place. I mean, there are people next to you with these oozing sores and sick kids. And I mean, it's horrible. And then when you finally get in, they don't treat like diseases. All they treat is like diabetes and stuff like that.
Mm. Jackie, are you on Medicare now?
It's hard. But my question is why doesn't anybody say that the reason we're in that position is because Rick Scott sent back, the legislature, whoever, sent back $4 billion I know you said it, but to expand Medicaid.
Yes, ma'am.
And that money went to Ohio.
It definitely got distributed to other folks that took up the opportunity to expand Medicaid. I mean, there are even very red states like Kentucky that did expand Medicaid and took advantage of that opportunity. And unfortunately, our state legislature and our governor did make that decision not to expand Medicaid. The way the program was originally designed was to do exactly what you're talking about, which was to cover everybody under 100% with no cost option of Medicaid. And it's very unfortunate that Florida, as a state, made that decision. And again, that is probably the hardest conversation as navigators we have with consumers every day.
It was just really, really, really hard for me. I'm now old enough to be getting Medicare. But, I mean, it was just horrible.
I would encourage you to tell your story to your local state legislature, legislator.
But there's nothing anybody can do. You know, because it's been done, and nobody seems to be talking about it, and everybody thinks, oh, Rick, you know, Rick Scott should be our next senator, and what a great job he did. But I mean, it's hard.
Just so you know, that there is a bill that's going into the Florida legislature this particular legislative session that does talk about expanding Medicaid again. There has been that option actually every legislative year. And if you have a very personal story as a constituent, I would really encourage you to reach out to your local state legislator and tell them how that affected you.
All right, Jackie, thanks a lot.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. If you've got a question about the Affordable Care Act, the deadline to sign up is next Friday. And Melanie Hall is here, who is Executive Director of the Family Healthcare Foundation here in the Tampa Bay area, one of the local experts on signing up for the Affordable Care Act. Ernie writes this: do you recommend that a veteran who gets his health care from the VA with no copay also sign up for a Medicare supplemental plan? Is that within your bailiwick there?
It's actually really not, but I will tell you who to call for that question. And there is an organization called SHINE, and that's an acronym, and they do for Medicare what we do for the health insurance marketplace. They're an excellent resource. I would highly encourage you to reach out to them and ask any of your Medicare questions to the amazing volunteers at SHINE.
Are you getting a lot of questions about signing up for the Affordable Care Act here in the last few days of this year?
It's a little overwhelming at the moment, actually, to be honest with you. Again, I think everything is more intense because of the 6-week time frame. We've had 3 months before to sign people up. And so it does feel like it's action-packed at the moment.
But at the same time, people, as you've heard already this morning, people have excellent questions. People are very informed consumers, and we want to make sure they have the most accurate information as possible.
Well, if you've got a question for Melanie, call us up, 813-239-9663. Now, Stu writes, when income is counted under the ACA, is it gross or adjusted income?
So that's a great question, and those terms can be confusing. Typically, we do say it's gross income because it is pre-tax. However, when you talk about adjusted income for someone who, for example, is self-employed, that does mean that you're taking out your business expenses. So the best thing to do is to be able to use the line on your previous tax year's form that talks about your adjusted income. That's correct. But it is pre-tax income. It is not, you know, sometimes people bring in their pay stubs and they think it's the amount that they're actually getting paid, which is post-tax. And that's not the income that's being considered.
And is Social Security, let's say that you have a Social Security check coming in for whatever reason, is it counted as part of your income?
It is. Yeah. And actually, that's for most people a benefit, because if you have two people living off Social Security that, you know, prior to them, you know, qualifying for Medicare, it's really that amount that's getting them over that, barely over, but over that 100% of FPL to be able to qualify for this program.
Let's take some more phone calls. Wayne is in Sarasota. Hi, Wayne, you're on with Melanie Hall. What's your question about the ACA? Hi, Wayne. Wayne, did we lose you? Hey, Wayne.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, Wayne, what's your question?
I'm going to try to make this short. Medicaid will pay for the cost of a nursing home after taking pension and Social Security from the client. If the client can stay in the family's home and the family can be certified to be safe and capable to take care of them, Medicaid in Florida will not redirect those funds to help pay the family to take care of the person. The average cost for a nursing home, give or take, is $6,000 to $8,000 that the state is paying. The statistics are consistent. Every 3 months, a client in the nursing home suffers from a UTI, a urinary tract infection, or dehydration. They have to be taken by ambulance to the hospital and stay for anywhere from 24 to 48 hours and be rehydrated or given antibiotics. The cost is generally around $6,000 plus. That happens four times a year. On average, that's $24,000 on top of what the state is paying for the nursing home. I have been helping take care of my parents-in-law in our home in Sarasota for the past 7 years. We are like a freestanding nursing home, the quality of care that we're giving. There have been no visits to the hospital. The quality of life is superior. All the evidence is conclusive on that. Medicaid, however, will not help us with our costs to continue that care. We have gone through our private savings, our retirement fund, the family estate fund, and the sale of my parents' home. We have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars out of our pocket to take care of the parents-in-law, what the Republicans would call a family value. But when we ask Medicaid, which we have done, to divert money so that we can pay our bills to continue to take care of my mother-in-law in the home, no, they will not do that. And the amount of support that you can expect through a diversion fund is minimal.
Well, Wayne, let me interrupt. We understand, I think, what you're saying is, why doesn't Medicaid allow this? And Melanie, let me ask you, why doesn't Medicaid allow this? And my guess is that Wayne has got to be among hundreds of thousands of people who do the same thing and have the same question here in the U.S.
He is. And first of all, Wayne, I really commend you for the level of care that you're providing for your family members, and I know how much that means to them. But I just want to let you know that there are the one thing that I think does exist right now in all this uncertainty about healthcare, which makes most of us, especially me, uncomfortable at the moment, is the fact that there are opportunities to change systems. And I think now is an absolutely ideal time for you to visit your local state legislator as well as your local Congress member. Explain your family's story, because this is not an isolated incident. This is something that we hear all the time. And I really feel that there may be an opportunity in the uncertainty in this, the healthcare world, policy world at the moment, to really be able to address things in potentially a new and creative way. So please,
do you know that? Is there any bill in Tallahassee? Go ahead, Wayne. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just want to add one other element which the Republicans would understand. In addition to family values, they're always talking about value for value financially. Well, the numbers are conclusive that if I were given $6,000 a month so that my wife and I could continue to stay home and care for my mother-in-law, we would have a far more, from a fiduciary point of view, a far more a superior outcome and save the state and the federal government money.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Because of the strength of the lobby, they will not do that.
Here's an email from Elio. He says, Wayne needs to call the DOEA in Tallahassee and sign his mother up for diversion. This will give him some relief. Melanie, what do you think about that strategy?
Let me just add the answer to that email. They're correct, and thank you for that referral. We have already done that. Here's what you will get, because we're in the middle of getting it right now. They will pay for diapers. They will pay for consumables. They will send Meals for Wheels to the home. We're already preparing the food. They will send from a health care agency paying them $25 an hour, a health care aide for 20 hours a week. We're taking care of her 24/7. So what you will get from that diversion is inadequate and minimal.
All right. Wayne, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Good luck, too, because it's a little bit off topic because we're trying to talk about the ACA, but certainly, healthcare reform in its entirety is a big problem. That's what Wayne was addressing there. Let's go to Andrea in St. Petersburg. Andrea, thanks for calling. What's your question for Melanie?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I'm trying to sign up for next year, but I'm starting.
Okay, now Andrea, you're breaking up. I don't know if you can move the phone a little bit closer.
Is that better now?
Yeah, let's try it. Let's try it. And we only have about a minute, I'm sorry to say.
Okay. My daughter is turning 26 in May, and my gross income will have a good benefit from the subsidy from the government. But what about afterwards, after May?
So
she
after
won't qualify.
That's correct. So after May, when she turns 26, it will be based off of her income. So, again,
She doesn't work.
Okay, then
it leaves with us.
Okay, then at this point, I would go ahead now and start investigating the Pinellas County health care plan. But she will not be able to stay on your insurance after she turns 26. That was one of the benefits, actually, of the Affordable Care Act, was allow parents to keep their adult children on their plans until they were 26.
But then my income for us after she turns 26. You're gonna have to change plans, right? Because my income will be for two people instead of three.
That's correct. You will have to report that as a life change.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. So I have to make less money then. After that, to qualify for more stuff.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going?
I think the most important thing is that you keep the program updated so that when you go to file your taxes the following year, you won't have to reconcile and be surprised when you file your taxes. It's always a good idea to keep the program updated.
I understand. Thank you so much for your help.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you. So, Melanie, the deadline to sign up for the Affordable Care Act is next Friday. And your group offers free advice, free counseling, free navigation services for people who may have a hard time understanding the ACA. How can they get in touch with you?
There are a couple of different ways. One of the easiest ways is to go on the website coveringtampabay.org And there is actually a link there that says request an appointment. And there are appointments available all over the four-county area, not only with the Navigators under the project with the Family Health Care Foundation, but also there's another grantee over in Pinellas County that has a good amount of availability as well. So there are plenty of opportunity. I wouldn't say plenty in the last week. If you want that one-on-one assistance, try and get a hold of us ASAP. But you can also call our project line, which is 813-995-1066. And again, we have an event tomorrow morning that you can make an appointment for.
At Al Lopez Park.
That's correct. Hunt Recreation Center. Correct.
Melanie Hall, thank you so much. This is WMNF.